after the announcement of Google and DC Blocks, we recently announced Meta and DC Blocks, which was another $30 million.
We're live. Episode 13 of The Deal Ranch. Sandy Davis of the Myrtle Beach Regional Economic Development Corporation. Glad I got it right.
It's a lot to say.
It certainly is. Well, we have certainly have a lot to talk about. I think kind of funny how this happened in the first place. 2 weeks ago, when we did the Mark Lazarus episode, you came in that morning as a guest speaker for our men's group. You told your story. 2 hours later, Mark tells a story that you're involved, and I'm like, well, I got to get her on the show, I guess. So I called you. And then now we're here 2 weeks later doing it. But give an intro on yourself, your background a little bit, and then the corporation here today.
Thank you, Matt.
But thanks for having me.
I am excited about you being here. I always love to share our story. So the Myrtle Beach Regional Economic Development Corporation, also known as MBREDC. I have been here since 2013. Prior to the MBREDC name, it was actually known in Horry County as Partners of Horry County.
Got it.
And it was the Economic Development Group. They restructured back in 2011, changing the name more for branding.
So interesting.
A lot of people knew Myrtle Beach, so they just decided, even though it was a county arm of recruitment for the area, that it was better known as Myrtle Beach Regional versus Partners. So the goal is to really just diversify the economy from just being a tourism location. Mm-hmm. We're always going to be known for as being a destination area. But I think as Coastal Carolina University came more into play and began to develop a lot more programs along with Horry Georgetown Technical College, the community leaders saw it many years ago that a lot of their children were moving away to find jobs.
Mm.
So I think that was kind of how it started,
right?
To create more jobs in the area to keep your kids here.
Sure.
So that is what we strive to do.
Yeah.
We try to work with all the educational partners in the area and make sure that we have the skills for the companies we're recruiting.
That's one of the many things that you do here, at least. That's right.
That's the main tool for recruitment.
Right.
We also work with all of our existing industry to expand, make sure that we have other suppliers for them to support their needs. And also, we definitely want to recruit industry that supports our educational partners. We also have a private side that is our membership side, which I think we can talk about more when we go through funding structures and how we are able to do what we do.
Absolutely. Great, great overview. So, and your role here, I didn't introduce you fully.
My role here currently is the president and CEO, and I have been for the past 4 years.
Yeah, amazing. And we'll talk about how you got here. So before kind of unpackaging the beast of this corporation here, let's talk about your background a little bit. So you're... are you a native to Oregon?
I am.
Okay.
I have been here my entire life. My mom's family was from Loras. My dad's family was from New Jersey. So
I
share most of the locals and those also known as the Yankees. I'm just
That's
a combination.
Right. Good bit of both. So you went to Coastal. After Coastal, I think you wanted to do a little bit of teaching. You did it for a very short amount of time and then realized, hey, at some point in time, you went to school for accounting. You went to Carolina Southern Railroad, right? What was the experience? How'd you end up there?
At the time that I was going to school, I was also working at HTC. And when I graduated, I taught some classes here. And then I took a position in accounting because I was not in accounting at HTC.
Oh, interesting.
So I took the controller position at Carolina Southern Railroad.
Seems like a big role to get.
It was.
Yeah.
It was a lot to learn. Railroad is a lot different than many other businesses.
Absolutely.
So it
Why
was so? A lot to learn. You just, one thing that you do is that you do not pay into Social Security. You actually pay into railroad retirement.
Oh, wow.
So it was just a lot to learn on the way that I had been taught to do payroll versus what I was doing then. There are also a lot of things that have to be filed federally that I was not used to. So the FRA had a lot of different regulations and a lot of things, excise tax, just different things that I wasn't used to doing that I learned along the way. But there was a great guy retiring from there, and he taught me very well. So I felt like I had, and it was a small company. It's not like it was a huge company.
Yeah.
But as I went through our path at the railroad, along the way, there are a lot of bridges involved at Carolina Southern Railroad.
Yep.
The line runs from Mullins to Whiteville, and then back to Conway, Myrtle Beach area. So it doesn't just come, a lot of people think, well, they unload or they pick up their cars in Marion and they come straight into Horry County, but it doesn't work that way. So it goes from Mullins into North Carolina and all the way back around.
Wow.
So during that time when the railroad closed due to the bridge repairs that were needed, they formed a committee, the three counties that that the railroad surpassed. So it would, or encompassed, it would be Horry County, Columbus County, and Marion County. And it was called the Tri-County Railroad Committee. And we met usually in Loris. That was kind of the middle ground. At that time, Mark Lazarus was on that committee.
Very cool.
Doug Wendell.
Yep.
And then some partners from other places, the other counties. I'm trying to remember. I can't remember all of their names. But we all met, and that was how I met Brad Lofton. He came to the committee, he and Doug Wendell and Mark, to help get economic development because a lot of our companies in Horry County were relying on the railroad at that time.
Wow.
So I met them, and as the railroad...
What year was that you met them?
2012.
Okay.
And I worked with them on that committee for a year and was offered a job to come to work at the EDC.
Wow.
And I think I was offered in November of 2012. And I came in March of 2013.
Wow. But you spent 11 years at the railroad. So that's a pretty compressed story there. What do you think, I think being in any company, any role, right, that's transportation-based, you get to really understand local municipalities, local governments, obviously transportation being a big thing that is handled in any economic development group or committee. So what do you think you learned the most, or what did you learn over time being at the railroad for that decade that helped a lot in this role today? I'm sure a lot of stuff.
The biggest thing, if I could sum it into one, is that I worked closely with the county because the county does own some of the railroad line, and it is a lease agreement. So we worked with them each year. We had to provide how much capital we had put into the railroad, and then they would give you back a certain amount for the part of the line that you leased.
Wow.
So along the way, I met a lot of the county employees, and I was asked to join the Planning Commission by Al Allen. So I started, I was a planning commissioner for Horry County for 12 years.
Wow.
And so it just gave you that commission, if you've never been there, it gives you an opportunity to learn a lot about the county. So I went in not knowing anything and learning as each project came about.
Sure.
And then slowly you learned about zoning and what was required. And then you learned about new business coming to the area.
Yeah.
And also working with the railroad, I worked with the industries.
Yeah.
So they were the people who would usually utilize rail service.
Right.
So it wasn't when I came to the EDC, it wasn't that I had never heard of industry. Some of these names were very familiar because of our background at the railroad.
Yeah. And learning the people in the process too, understanding how long certain things take with zoning and the right people or the channels to go through too. So that's fascinating. So fast forward 2013, you come here and you were director of operations and then project manager, or was that
that's
one
correct.
Role? What was the role?
I started out as director of operations, and that was in March.
Yep.
I was hired by Brad Lofton.
Mm-hmm.
I was away with another former coworker at the time. She and I went to a training, my first step into the door of pretty much intro to economic development. And while I was there, I got the call from our chairman at that time, and he said, "We had a meeting today, just wanted to let you know. Brad Lofton is moving back to Georgia and will not be here when you get back, because our job is very competitive with other areas. And since he was going back to somewhere else, that meant when you turn in, that means pretty much when you turn in your notice, if you're going somewhere else, then you're, that's it. You don't really work out a notice.
That's right.
So I never got to see him. And he was gone by the time we got back. So from that point, my chairman took in and just took on the responsibility while they were looking for someone to hire of being that, that playing that role of CEO.
Sure.
And so we had some trips, we had some wins that were already in place, and we just kind of, he was like, I just want you to take this with me and we're going to do this. And that is what we did. And I think we did that from July until November. And then in November, they hired a president, and he stayed until maybe April. And then he took another job. And then from, I was intern from April to probably September. I was interim. I was offered the job. Do you want to do it? And I said, no, I did not want to do it. I was just still very, you know, young in the role, just learning. And then Josh Kay took the position that January. So we pretty much went about 8 months without anyone. And then Josh Kay came in, and he had been in economic development. He started in January. He worked with me for 3 to 4 years. He was an excellent president who wanted me to exceed. And at that time, I had already become a project manager. So he trained me, taught me some things that I did not know, sent me on some more trainings, really pushed for me to become IEDC certified, which I still have not become. I have completed all of the courses.
It's coming.
And time for me to sit for my exam was when COVID broke out. So then it kind of got pushed back, and now I need a renewal course. But that is something that's in our plan for the future.
There you
go. And Josh left, and when he left, they offered me the position, and I took it as interim.
Sure.
And agreed to do that for 3 months to kind of see how it went. And then if I decided I wanted to take it, I would. And then I ended up taking it.
There you go. Congrats. Now we're here.
Here we are.
So that brings us to current day. So how do you unpack the beast here of this corporation? And how does it fit within? I know we talked about the brand change and the name change, but not to be confused, it is a county, right, organization here. So what is its role, I guess, in the county government? Like, how does it get funding? Like, or I'll let you overview, I guess, the program, and then we can dive into intricacies here.
Okay. So we are a public-private partnership. We are a 501c6, and we are made up of really not only the county funding, which is $1.1 million, and I'm going to break that down for you in just a minute, but $1.1 million comes from the county. It does not all come direct to the EDC, but that is the budget for the EDC.
Interesting.
That is broken down by directing $200,000 of that to go to NISA.
Okay.
Are you familiar with NISA?
I'm not, but I'm about to find out.
That's right. It's a it's our regional organization for about 9 counties make that up. We're all economic development together.
Wow.
It's called the Northeastern Strategic Alliance.
Very cool.
And every area pretty much has one. I mean, like Upstate Alliance, Central South Carolina Alliance, everyone has an alliance. And they help us with anything pretty much that we contact them for. They have people who help us lobby against certain things for companies. And we meet monthly and discuss with other economic developers in their region our problems that we're seeing, and they take that and they work on that for us. So $200,000
is a membership fee in a way.
That's
okay, and then they're giving you services to help move the needle politically or regionally.
Exactly.
In a way. Okay.
And just to show how helpful they have been this past year, we wrote a grant that we wanted, and it was for $400,000. That they provide out of proviso money from the state, and we received that $400,000. Well, you couldn't. I probably would not be able to do that if I wasn't a member of NISA for their, because it's their independent grant. So for that $400,000,
yeah,
I only paid $200,000.
Exactly.
So it's a really good deal. Yeah. And then $300,000 each year right now. Sometimes this fluctuates. Okay. But for this year, the $300,000 is going to our Prospect and Product Development Fund. And then we have another $100,000 that is going.
What does that $300 get us here?
Okay.
Prospect and Product Development Fund, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
So when we buy a county park, or if we decide we want to build a county spec building, we would be able to use that those funds. It hasn't always been $300,000. Sometimes there was no money going to that fund.
Yeah.
But we have seen the need, and we are currently working on that, which is something we mm-hmm. can talk about, is that if we do not have any product to sell,
yeah.
that people won't pay us a visit. So
of course,
we
yeah,
have several buildings.
Day.
Right.
Yeah.
So now yeah. we have several buildings that we have been able to do, and one of those is our spec building we're doing at Ascot Valley.
Yep.
We'll purchased the land.
Yeah.
So that's the pot of money that would come out of.
So to make sure I understand, okay, so this 300 roughly, you say more or less each year, this product development or prospect and product development fund.
It's really product development.
Product development. Is that getting spent each year? Because
no, we try to make it.
Because I was going to say, what are you going to buy with 300 grand?
That's right. So we've been saving for that for a while. I think right now we're probably close to $2 million that we have accumulated in that fund. Also, other money goes into that fund.
Yeah.
So we have the PTR building was a spec building. It's located at the Cool Springs Park
yep.
where the gun manufacturer is. Mm-hmm. Their rent money that they pay, it goes also into that fund because that was a county spec building.
Wow. Very cool.
So that's very good. $100,000 of the money goes into an incentive fund. And that is how we incentivize the projects. So then, and we'll talk about that, how we incentivize the projects. So $600,000 actually comes to our organization.
Got it.
And we use that for anything administrative and public funds. We cannot use that to bring in a project. That is considered private funding. We cannot pay for hotels. We cannot pay for dinners. We cannot pay for food. So that is why we have our private side. On our private side, we raise dollars to pay for any of those fees because
yep.
you have to do it.
Of course,
I mean,
yeah.
if they're going to come, if we're inviting them to come look at our area and try to win a project, you're not going to ask them to fly here, pay for all their own meals, pay for their hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to kind of win it.
yeah.
So we are grateful that we do have private members who understand we can't use public dollars for that. We also have companies who are private companies who donate that money and their time and are willing to go with us when we have the prospects in town.
Wow.
And also the municipalities, their money's private too. I mean, their monies are public dollars too.
Sure.
That's an addition to that 1.1.
Got
so
it.
From it, there's every single city located within the county also gives us money.
Wow.
And it ranges. It can be anywhere from $40,000 down to $500 a year.
Wow.
But we also receive that money, and that's usually, it's usually around at least $150,000 more.
Okay. So before I forget, so the remaining, this the last bucket here of the $500 or $600 that mm-hmm. remains, what was this part used for, you're saying?
It's our admin fees. So
okay.
pretty much payroll, retirement, health insurance.
Pays everyone in the office here.
Yes.
Then.
If I need telephone.
Okay.
Copier, any kind of office needs really is just really anything just for in here.
Sure. And then you're saying on the private side, is it donation based or does that come through local taxes? Like how are the additional funds?
On the private side is just members. So just companies who give us money.
Sponsorship.
Yep.
Okay.
So like today, we had an event this morning, our 11th annual CCAR and EDC community forum update. We provided breakfast. We had a location.
Right.
So for that, Bank of America sponsored and paid for that this morning, and Ori Georgetown Technical College donated the facility for that meeting. So it's different each time, and that will depend sometimes on how many sponsors we have. but we also use that private dollars. Like last year, we received $339,951 in private membership.
Wow.
So that covered their fees. Plus, we go out. We go on recruiting missions. So I may be in New York and New Jersey for a week. Then I have to entertain them there and take them out to lunch or dinner.
I heard you went to London in a different
I did. Yeah. I went after we recruited a company from there, we really got a lot of attention. So every time, it just depends. We're going to go to Fort Lauderdale soon for the boat show.
Very cool.
And the Fort Lauderdale boat show. And then we'll also be going to Ibex, because right now one of the areas that we're trying to recruit for is boat building, boat manufacturing. We have the Bucksport Marine Park.
I saw that one. Yeah.
And also, Ori Georgetown Technical College has recently started the boat building program and the outboard mechanic program for and the diesel mechanic program. So we have a bunch of skills that will be available. So we want to kind of target that.
Apply them. Yeah. Before we jump off topic of sponsors, where do they come from? Are they all mainly local businesses that
are usually local? They may not all be in Horry County, but they're usually within South Carolina.
I think from the website that I picked through, the sponsors that you have, couple fellow Deal Ranch guests. So the Jackson Company sponsored, Anderson Brothers Bank, and then obviously Lazarus Entertainment. So that's very cool. I figured I'd plug them for those
guys. That's right. Yes, great customers.
That's right. Okay, so moving on to so ultimately, you have a couple different jobs. One, you need to bring businesses in here. That drives tax revenue for us. But also bring businesses in here that farms where we're sitting here at the college campus, for our kids to stay here and get good high-paying jobs, right? And that leads to a plethora of growth metrics and other opportunities for our counties, our citizens, too. So what you guys do is very critical to the county and the community, but it kind of stretches everywhere, kind of comes through. So how are companies incentivized to come here? So we have some property tax reduction based on if you invest here. What are the other ones? How are people incentivized?
There are different incentives depending on where you locate.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you locate within Loris, we have a Loris Industrial Park. Loris has a millage located within their city that is about 110.
Yeah.
It's a high millage for a municipality, but they're very small.
Right.
So this past year, they passed a ordinance to incentivize industrial for our park if they come in. And they would reduce their millage by 30 mils.
Wow.
So that is one way to get people. Because if you do not do this within the city, then they'll just locate right outside of the city.
Of course,
limits.
Yeah.
So that is one reason. And we work to fill those parks. And that park is within the city limits. So we needed to do something.
Got it.
And with the growth that we're seeing, it looked like that was some of the steps we needed to take in order to be able to locate more companies there. In addition to tax incentives such as a PHILO and a SSRC, which is familiar. SSRC is what I'm talking about on reducing the mills.
Yep.
On a fee in lieu, that would reduce their tax rate from 10.5% to 6%.
Wow.
That is something we usually do for any company that's investing more than $2.5 million on their building and land.
Got it.
So then we have the county incentives for grants. And if they are over 35 new jobs that will be created, and the wage is above $16.21 an hour, that was where it was when the policy was written, and they have to also offer health insurance and retirement.
Got it.
Then they are eligible for some type of grant. That grant may be anywhere from $50,000 up to, I've seen, $750,000. We step that. If you hire half of them, then you would get half the money. And you have a 5-year period to attain those goals.
Wow.
And you give us those numbers. So whoever the project is would say, I'm going to create 100 jobs. Well, in 5 years, if you didn't, you would not have received all your money. It would just be maybe when you did half, you received half the money. And then there's also a clawback in that incentive that they could possibly make you pay it back. So it's not easy free money, like a lot of people think. And the state usually mirrors something very similar to us. So they will also do a grant, and it will be based off the jobs and the incentives. Once you show that you have invested all the dollars that you said you would do on your building, then they will usually reimburse you the amount of their grant, which is similar to ours, anywhere from $50,000 to $500,000 or whatever. It really just depends, but that's usually, I haven't seen theirs more than $250,000.
Fascinating.
And then there's job tax credits, job development credits, training programs, apprenticeships. There are several other ways to incentivize companies.
Yeah, it seems like they're used in a variable way, right? Some are attractive to other companies, right?
Exactly.
So as far as the application of this, so you've kind of outlined why it's important or why it's really beneficial for companies to come here. For you, from a day-to-day perspective, like what does that even look like? We have all these good time to talk about available sites probably, but like we have these sites that are already set up. Can you outline it? Because it's a little bit confusing to me, honestly.
It's confusing to me.
That's okay.
So on a day-to-day, it just depends. Whether I'm working with a company that has already visited the area or a company that is already here that's expanding or someone totally new.
Sure.
So if we are working with someone who is totally new, the first thing we would usually do is ask them what they're looking for.
Got it.
If they say they're looking for 10 to 15 acres of land, they do not care about visibility, and depending on the amount of workers they're going to want, we usually run demographics for all of our industrial parks, see which one's a fit. It's probably, unless it's technology or aviation related, it's probably not going to be in ITAP, our International Technology and
Right
Aerospace
next to Market
Park.
Commons.
Exactly. Yep. So we would probably look more at Loris. Our Ascot Valley Park is full on phase one.
Yeah.
So we just purchased phase two across the street. It's another 50 acres. And then we have our Cool Springs Park.
Yep.
So we have videos of all of these on our
They're great
site.
Videos.
Thank
Very cool
you.
Videos. Yep.
It breaks down what usually the questions companies or site selectors ask us.
Got it.
So we would send that to them. They usually perform all their own demographic reports, even though we send them one for each park. And that is the drive time of available workforce within 45 minutes of each site. So that is things that they usually ask for. And then they want to know.
They're doing housing studies too on like.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Then they want to know what will my taxes be at this location if I built this size building and it costs this much. So we usually do that. Then they'll plan a visit. And during that visit, they'll usually have it broken down to how many sites they want to visit. It's usually not everything you sent them.
Sure.
And sometimes they will even say, I don't want to be in a park. So from that, we'll go out and, you know, work with some of our realtor members and find parcels that are for sale that we will show them. Then they fill out something called a project profile sheet that tells us how many employees they're going to have, the capital investment. From there, we usually generate back to them within a week a incentive plan outlining all of their incentives from Department of Commerce with both state and local incentives.
Wow.
So that is kind of the project.
Process,
and then
yeah.
they will tell us, you know, our board plans, and this is a big, big difference, but sometimes we will get, our board's going to be making a decision in the next 2 to 3 months, and sometimes we'll get, it's going to be two to three years.
2 to 3 years, yeah. So. That's the business as a whole.
Exactly.
Any development business. So how are the available sites, who owns the available sites? Because some seem to be private, right? Mm-hmm. Some are for sale, some are for lease. What makes an industrial site or even just this raw undeveloped land, right? How do you guys get these as available sites? What makes them a economic development available site?
Really, the answer to that is if it becomes available and we think it's a good opportunity, like Ascot Valley.
Yeah.
That land was not for sale that we just purchased on phase two. We just found it because it was close to what we had. We approached the owner, and he was willing to sell because he also believes in diversity and economic development, thought it was a good project. So he sold that to us at a good price. The site across from it, how that became about, is Santee Cooper also has an economic development department. So when that prior mill closed, that was their Conway Mill, they bought the site. And then they tore the building down and we master planned that park for them, the EDC did. And then we have sold it off during COVID and Santee Cooper, that was what they wanted done with it. They wanted to create jobs. So we have been able to locate 6 companies in there.
Wow. So to dive down this rabbit hole then, so Ascot Valley starts to become developed. There's no initial thought of, hey, let's get these other parcels. That kind of percolates as development starts to.
That's right.
Then you see the opportunity, or maybe that land's stagnant, or you hear about it. You're contacting a broker that you probably have a good relationship with, and then they're calling in. Like, is that the process, or some is more natural than others of acquiring these other local sites?
No, we usually don't call a broker unless it's listed.
So do you call the landowner?
I call the landowner.
Do you really?
Yes.
That's cool. I love that. I did not expect that.
We search for the land and we find available land, we actually call the landowner.
I do that all the time. That's fascinating. I thought you would work with a local broker to make the call. Okay. So then your role on a day-to-day is everything from bird dogging available land to do, and then also hosting and wine and dining other big, big companies that are coming to town, and then all the minutia in between.
Yes, existing industry. So yeah. We have close to 200 existing industries, and it is a requirement that we meet with each one of them at least one time a year.
Wow.
So that is what we do in our spare time.
Spare time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. Is there anything we missed? I wanted to spend a good bit of time talking about these 2 gigantic deals that you guys did last year, and maybe it started the year before. But anything else pertinent to day-to-day operations here or the corporation as a whole before we kind of
dive into the deals? The one other component that I would like to add is that these incentives, even though they are, we kind of have a guideline book from county council.
Yep.
But before it is complete, we go into executive session with a code name, present the project, how many employees it's going to be, the capital investment, and make sure it meets those requirements of the threshold that county council had originally agreed on, and make sure that they're all in favor of that type of project. And then we do the same if it's located within a city. We let them know about the project, make sure they're all on board. And the state level does the same in their committee meetings as well. So it really is a lot of
partners.
What's
the time frame on that? Like, you get a company that says, hey, we want to do this, and then you're presenting that project. Is that one meeting? Is that?
It's one meeting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, once they approve it, there is documents that have to go through county council after that, such as a fee in lieu agreement. Fee in lieu agreement, that takes 3 readings at county council, usually 2 at the city level.
With your team aligned on trying to grow high-paying jobs or quality jobs here and bring new companies in, is the county council not aligned on those same objectives? I guess the question is, like, what are they looking for in your presentation that you guys aren't looking for? Or is it pretty cohesive?
It's pretty cohesive, yes. Okay. They gave us our guidelines, so we kind of know what we're following.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, something may come along that doesn't fall into those guidelines.
Interesting.
For example, it will be one of them that we are getting ready to talk about.
Yeah.
And then it requires, since we have guidelines to go through, then it would require a variance.
Got it.
And so that would be something that will require a vote when we come out of executive session. If there's a vote required, they will take it at that time to accept the company with the incentives with a variance.
Interesting. Do you want to shift gears to talking about your 2 big deals? Which one do you want to start off with?
Let's start off with DC Blocks.
Let's do it. Okay, so from at least my background on it, right, obviously it seems like it's been built and put up pretty quickly, right? If you come out of Market Commons and you pass it was kind of nothing for a while. Now it's rebranded, great building they've done, right on the edge of the airport there. So this is the subsea cable lines that Google and Meta, so Facebook, right, are running to Argentina and then across the Atlantic as well?
Yes, we have one going from Myrtle Beach to Spain and one going from Myrtle Beach to Argentina.
Which is crazy. So that should be, kudos to you. It should be significant for our area. Okay, so how did this deal kind of originate? So bringing this big company here, how many jobs and then how much did they commit? Like 30 plus million?
Yes, so in the beginning, the call came from Google.
Yep.
And Google said, you know, we're looking to put in a subsea cable. I had never heard of a subsea cable. There is not another located in South Carolina.
Yep.
So it took a little bit of research. We get a lot of random calls. People are going to bring all kind of businesses, even that are not yet a business.
Right.
So, you know, you really have to take each one and do your own research. Well, Google did not want to give their name in the beginning. So they were just telling me about a subsea cable, and I thought someone was pranking me. Yeah. I was like, what is this? I'm being punked.
So who did they say it was then? They said, hey, we're calling on behalf.
They're a technology company.
Okay, yeah.
And then probably we had a couple of conversations. A few weeks went by, and I received an email from the gentleman that I had been speaking with, and below his name it said Google.
When was this? So what month and year was that? I couldn't find the...
Let's see, this was probably 2020?
Oh, wow.
Maybe 19 or 20.
Jeez, okay. So they call you a 19 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
He emails you, then you realize this is Google. What do you do with that information once
you
realize it's real?
Well, then I was excited. Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, this is real. This is Google. This is, you know, they're...
The real deal.
Right. Mm-hmm. So... I still did not understand the impact of the jobs. I know that is our target, is to bring jobs.
Right.
So when they told me they were going to put out a bid and they would select someone to be their CLS provider, which is a cable landing station,
yep.
That means that they would build a building, house the data equipment, and then fiber would be run from that location to their office in Luxcor, from that, because of that subsea cable.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, you know, how many jobs is that going to be? Because, you know, I'm excited.
Yeah,
Google,
I bet you
and
are.
I'm thinking this is going to be huge. And they were like, well, it'll be about 3 jobs, 3 to 5. And I was like, oh, no. And then they're like, but it's going to be a $31.5 million capital investment. So I was like, well, that's great, because our money that they set aside for us that we talked about earlier comes from a certain percentage of the taxes that people pay. It's like a multi-county business park. We direct the money to go to a certain fund, and that supports economic development.
So of the 1.1, so you're saying that's generated from tax revenue, theoretically, of this DC Blocks deal?
Right. Right.
Okay.
Now, on this particular deal, it will not be. But
okay.
On all of
sure.
our other deals, it is. We direct that money go to there. So it's not actually coming out of the general fund.
Got it.
But on DC Blocks, because it went into the ITAP park,
mm-hmm.
all the people who paid for that infrastructure to be there, they put that in a multi-county park for that money to go back to those, the city and the county, to do other upgrades for that area. So that one is a little bit different because it was put in place before we came.
Sure.
But now every company that we bring, that's what we do with that. That's how we're funded. And if we never brought another company right now, we are completely funded till 2027 at least, if we didn't put another dime in there.
Wow.
So when DC Blocks was awarded that contract, we met with them.
When would that have been? So they get the call, you get the call in 2020. Google takes their kind of they need someone to build and maintain this data warehouse to RFP. I'm sure that's not a quick process.
No, that would have been in 2021.
Okay.
Is
when they decide on the DC Blocks, you're saying?
I think they decided at the beginning of 2021 or the end of 2020. I can't remember exactly,
cool.
But I'm pretty sure it was 2021.
Sure.
From that moment, they started studying a plan and exact location of where they we're going to go. We kind of knew by this point that the best place for the subsea cable to come in was Myrtle Beach State Park.
Yeah.
Less interruptions. The city has a lot of great planning that they're
mm-hmm.
doing, and this would mean that this fiber would have to be buried down the road somewhere on one of their roads
sure.
and make it back to wherever they were going to go.
Yeah.
At this point, we didn't know it was going to be ITAP.
Oh, wow.
Because we've had a problem in the past with locating businesses at ITAP. It was only going to be land lease only was the last thing that they had told us. Just because of the proximity to the airport, if the airport wanted to grow, that was kind of landlocking it.
Mm.
But if there was a certain area across the road that they felt like would be a good fit, DC Blocks felt like it was a good fit, Google felt like it was a good fit, and the airport supported it. So that's the first time we have been able to sell any land besides the VA hospital. And
wow.
That part was here before I got here.
Yeah.
So it has sat vacant.
Whew.
Same thing, really, with the Conway Mill site, the Ascot Valley.
Really?
That had been, the building was already torn down.
It sat there for like 2 years after you bought it or something?
It was, well, we, Sandy Cooper had bought it and torn down Conway Mill, and it had sat there for at least 5 years with no one. And then all of a sudden during COVID, we sold every lot. So, I mean, it's just, you never know. Every day is different. But DC Blocks has been great. And then after the announcement of Google and DC Blocks, we recently announced Meta and DC Blocks, which was another $30 million.
So these are two separate $30 million? Okay.
That's right. So now we're up to, we're actually up to $64 million now. And I feel sure that there's going to be another announcement this year.
So are, so the agreement between Google and DC Blocks and then Meta and DC Blocks, it's, are they both still using the same data warehouse
at
ITAP?
Their cable landing station. Got it. That's what they call it. But it is their data center to house their equipment. And this, I know a lot of people say, well, it's not a lot of jobs. What's so important about it? But the technology companies that want to be around a subsea cable. And people who are unfamiliar with it should really Google the Virginia Beach location, because they, it was, their center was built around a subsea cable, and they have a huge technology presence there now.
Wow. And not just landing cable, or not just cable that's going to go overseas for us here, but it's also, they're doing like some dark fiber that's running all the way to Atlanta, I think.
That's right.
Too. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and that's being located here in the ground.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be less interruptible, but it also frees up our space on the internet by them running through this subsea cable. That gives us better connection and less traffic. So,
sure.
I think that's really big too. And the more companies that hear about it, if there is a company that we're looking to recruit and their home office is in Spain or Argentina,
sure,
this is going to be more appealing to them.
I love it. Yeah.
Yes.
So it broke ground October 4th, 2022.
We
so not
did.
Really that long ago. The governor came down. It seemed like a huge deal for us as a county, but it seemed like it went as planned.
That's right. It went as planned. I thought it went very well. And then some exciting news that we haven't released yet.
Yeah.
October the 10th from 2 to 4 p.m., we will be having the ribbon cutting and tours in their new facility.
No way.
Yep. And the governor will be there to speak. Our Horry County Council Chairman Johnny Gardner will be speaking.
Love it.
I will be speaking. And we hope you'll come out.
What time?
2 to 4.
There you go. Okay. Very cool. Not to, you know, I mean, that's pretty, one great announcement there, but pretty significant deal. Two deals you did there. Not the only deal you did last year that was a big deal. And we heard about this one the other day with Mark, and I think maybe Waccamaw Land and Timber was involved in some.
They were.
Okay.
So earlier you had mentioned public and private parks.
Yep.
This is our only private park that we currently have that we showcase on our site.
This is the only private?
It is the only private park. We had an investor come in. NISA actually was who brought us this investor. Someone had reached out to them and they were like, we'd like to build a industrial park and we hear that your region is good.
Okay.
And he was like, well, let me point you to Horry County because they do not have any availability right now for companies to come to.
Sure.
We have land.
Yeah.
We did not have buildings. And this guy wanted to build buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So he is building four buildings that total 720,000 square feet. Just grade A space. It's just perfect, or class A space. It's just perfect, perfect for our area.
Yeah.
One we've already announced, Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
And had we not had that building already permitted and moving forward, we would have lost Pepsi to North Carolina. And so their current facility that's located in Conway, that is landlocked, we would have lost those jobs here in Horry County, and they could have chosen to drive to North Carolina, or they would have been replaced, and it would have been a long drive.
So this is Edgewater Ventures?
Edgewater Ventures.
So they called the county? Or
They called NISA.
Okay.
Our Northeastern Strategic Alliance Group.
So what was their... They just wanted to build four industrial buildings, 700,000.
They are a developer.
But where did they want to do that?
We helped choose that.
So what was their goal was, hey, we want to locate 700,000 square feet of industrial space somewhere in this region? Like, why did they, like, how does that work?
They just said they would like to build a spec building here because they knew that we had a lot of growth.
Got it.
And they were looking to be a developer. And a lot of times when you, that's another question when we get a project and they say they want this size building. That doesn't mean they want to own it or that they want to build it.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're very clear, which is what pushes us out of some of the opportunities when they say, I want a 200,000 square foot facility, an existing one.
Yeah, and we don't have.
Right.
Yeah.
So then we lose them. They can't come here to visit. So we were excited because here was a developer who wanted to build and who wanted to lease, and that was going to fix all of our problems for a while on the lease side.
Yeah.
Well, he hasn't completed any of the buildings yet, and I am pretty sure, well, we know we've locked one down.
Yep.
And as of next month, I will know if we have locked the second one down.
Wow.
So he was going to take them one at a time, build building one when it leased. Then he thought about building building two. And because of the land that we bought or that he was able to buy from Waccamaw Land and Timber, they pretty much took care of everything. And the team at DRG, Rob Wilfong's group.
Engineering.
Right. Yep. They had worked with the city of North Myrtle Beach to have this PUD, I guess, is for lack of a better word, that they did.
Yeah.
Yes. And so we knew that it fit that area, and we had been showcasing it, just had not had a lot of movement yet on it. It was because it's public, it's public, private property, it tends to cost more than our public. So usually you will not find our public parks located that close to the beach because the land is more. So we are usually looking for a lower deal. So the Waccamaw Land and Timber team and Edgewater Venture got together and made it happen.
Wow. So they came in, they wanted to build this space, but they obviously did. There was no contracts in place for what companies were going to be filling this space. They just knew kind of, you know, we didn't have any of this inventory. So their hypothesis was that it would fill quickly.
Yep. Okay. They came in and we talked about it. We kind of showed them the projects that we were working.
Yep.
Right now we have a backlog of 36 projects that we're active with on a daily basis.
Spec buildings?
No, 36 companies looking to move here. We work with them. They can be anywhere from deciding this year to deciding in the next 5 years. So they're really far out. Some of them are not. Then we have leads, which are people who just call us and say, hey, we're considering moving in the next couple of years.
Sure.
We leave them as a lead until they complete their project profile sheet and we have an incentive package in hand telling them what we would give them or until they visit. So we're working about 370 of those leads. Wow. And yes, and we have two of us that do that. So
Are you one of the two?
Yes. So it's a lot. And so when we shared with Chris what we were working, and we put in our system what size building they're looking for, so we could kind of show him what in 100,000 square foot seems to be our niche right now, 100 to 150.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what he did with his four buildings. And he made
Chris at
Edgewater.
Yep.
So Edgewater Ventures.
Yep.
So he made some of his where they're expandable. The Pepsi building is like that. That can start out
that.
And then it can expand another.
Up to like 150 or something. 156. Yeah. Wow. So Pepsi was done and they're moving from Conway. So it retained, I think, from what I saw, retained like the 130 some jobs, but then also added another 26 or 30.
That's
a win-win, right? We retain and then grow. But then also we have three proposed buildings that are going to come in too.
Exactly.
So this current deal, that's going to be complete when? It said Q4 2023 or could be longer than that?
The Pepsi building?
Yeah.
Yes. It's supposed to be completed by Q4.
Awesome.
I think they want to be up and running no later than November.
Very cool. So what else is on the agenda then for the rest of the year? So all of last year, I'm looking at your board here in the office.
I know.
You got quite a bit done. Is there any closer deals right now? I know you probably can't talk about some of them, but look like a good year coming to be?
I think we should have two more announcements before the end of October.
Wow.
We may not be. Last year was a record year ever at the EDC. So we announced over $130 million in capital investment and 268 jobs. So this year I'm thinking we're going to look more around $100 million in capital investment and 100 jobs at least. That's kind of what I'm thinking right now. We haven't announced any jobs of the year, and that's pretty normal for us.
Yeah.
If you look back to last year, most all of our projects were announced closer to the end of the year. We have announced Meta.
Yep.
We announced that expansion with the $30 million, but we I expect two more to announce besides that one. So we'll probably end our year with three. In 2021, we only had one announcement. So I feel like every year, you just really never know where you're going to be. So we have the availability now for companies to come and look at us.
Yeah.
So I think that you'll continue to see, as long as we have available buildings, I think you'll see a lot more announcements.
I love it. Any other available site before we kind of wrap up a little bit here? I know you love talking about Ascot Valley for a lot of reasons. Is there anything we missed about that
project? We have a 100,000 square foot facility going up at Ascot Valley that we partnered with Marlboro Development Team.
That's right.
And it also does not have a tenant.
Wow.
It's completely spec, just like Edgewater Ventures. And we have had several already visit and see that location. We also have an
existing. Is it complete already?
It's not.
When's
only
it
going to
be done?
When we announce that we have something permitted, it goes on the site and people immediately start contacting. Wow. That's okay. And sometimes they like it better because that takes off a long period of them, of their waiting time on getting permitted.
Yeah.
So this spec building that we're building will not be built out inside. It will just be a shell until we know who the tenant is. And then they'll decide how much office space they need and, you know.
Floor space. That's right.
So we expect it to be completed next year. We're looking at 2024, probably no later than August.
Wow.
Wow. And then we have plenty of parks that we're working on. The Bucksport Marine Park, Cool Springs, Loris, Ascot Valley Phase 2, ITAP, and Palmetto Industrial.
All available on the website
with flyover
videos.
Exactly.
Right.
Thank you, Matt.
So in wrapping up a little bit here, so for as far as what's next, I know we just kind of lightly touched on it for this year, but broader than just like what's going to close this year or come into town this year, we're in one of the fastest growing regions and rather city in the country for a little bit of time. But yet we also have that coupled with we have higher insurance cost a little bit right now, fluctuate, not a little bit, but then everyone's facing these higher interest rate changes too.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting in that we have this massive influx and still demand for everything here. But then we have these global or really national economic challenges too. So you said maybe 100 jobs this year. Where do you see the future of your organization? Do you think there's going to be a day where we get in $500 million or $500 million a couple of years from now in a year? Is it going to ever be a 500 job? Like, where do you see the future going?
I don't really see us going there until we have a few different things. One would definitely be an interstate.
Yep.
Secondly would be natural gas.
Yeah.
A lot of the larger companies that are huge manufacturers use a large amount of natural gas. And as of right now, we really do not have that availability on any of the parks that we have. So we have been searching. We recently thought that we had found some land, and it ended up it had more wetlands than what we could navigate. So we've gone back to our search on that side.
Got it.
And I feel like we struggle right now with workforce. We do live in an area where sometimes people like the tourism schedule and they want to work from March until October and then take off. So really until some of these skills that the colleges are aligning with that start to graduate and grow more of our workforce in those areas, I don't foresee us having a company that needs 500 jobs in the first 2 years, because we have companies that are struggling finding 50. So we don't want to go out there and do that. But on the other side of that is that we are a great place to live, and people feel like they could live where they vacation and be happy here. So that side of it makes it a great place to recruit talent as well.
Absolutely.
So I'm not going to rule out a 500. I'm not going to rule out a 2,000. It just depends on the time frame that they have to hire that amount of people.
Yeah. Fascinating. As far as the industries that we service now, is there, or we service a lot of industries now here, is there a specific business or industry that you haven't brought to town that you personally either want to, or maybe you think we have a gap that we need to fill or maybe haven't done yet?
Well, honestly, during COVID, I thought we needed a toilet tissue manufacturer.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
but I think I've passed that point now. It really just, it depends sometimes on who I hear from and what their struggles are.
Yeah.
I still think one of the things that I would like to see here that we do not have is some pharmaceutical manufacturing.
Sure.
I feel like that was also a problem we struggled with during COVID.
Yeah.
And I just not only feel that it's a problem in South Carolina and Horry County, I feel like it's a problem in the U.S. So that would be something I would really like to do. Being the announcer of the subsea cable in South Carolina and being the first one, I feel like I'm still riding that wave right now because
are.
I didn't even ever think that that was something. I didn't even know what it was to try to recruit that.
Yeah.
So I feel like everything changes so fast that really I'm unsure because there's so many things I do not know that I want to learn about. And then, of course, if South Carolina doesn't want to have it, it doesn't have one here, I would like to be the leader in the state.
Exactly
to have
right.
It here. So that's pretty much the only answer I have for that right
it's
now.
It's a good answer.
Thank
Last
you.
Question for you. Kind of riding that wave there, right? You have this immaculate career. You've driven such significant growth for our county. Seems like you like your job here. You've got here through railroad. Who do you think, who are a couple of people that helped you the most along your career, do you think?
I would say that I have a few on my board who really helped me grow. I would have never, I do not like to do public speaking. It was never something I wanted to do. Politics is the second thing. The whole reason I never wanted the job.
Right.
And I will say that I learned a lot from Mike Hagg, Neil Wiltson, Fred Richardson, and Jim Apple. They were some of the four people who led me when they wanted me to become president. Those four people kind of took me by the hand and showed me the ropes and believed in me. So I would say that I value their opinions. I think that they are four great leaders in our community, and I would definitely go to them if I ever have any questions that I feel like
there you go.
They always have a good answer.
I love it. Actually, one last question for you. Is there anything we missed about the program? How can people get involved? How can they find out more information? Plug what you need to plug.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, like I said earlier, we are a public-private partnership.
Yep.
And in order to make some of these changes happen and be able to bring the people into town, we do need private funding.
Mm-hmm.
So we call those our partners. And we have a membership program very similar to that of a chamber. And you pay $500 a year up to whatever amount you want to per year. I think we usually go up to like $40,000. Our top membership level is $10,000. Just some people pay different. But it is a annual fee and you receive different things for your money depending on which level. But you also receive tickets to all of our events for free.
Yep.
We do member highlights. So if there's ever anything going on and you want to share it, we share that for you for free. Yep. We make introductions to our other partners. And it's really just great not only for you to get involved and grow your business, but also to help support more incoming business for our area and community.
I love it. There was one program, I think, at the college here, manufacturing program that maybe we missed or didn't talk about.
Our industry awareness course. That's thank you. So that's a new program that we started last year. Our kickoff was last year in August, and they graduated this past year in May. That is mostly because of the people in our community thinking we do not have industry because we do not have those 500 employees or 2,000. So some of them may be 35 to 50 employees.
Right.
But they make a lot of products for Honda, Boeing, BMW. You just don't hear
huge
about them. They are the tier two and tier threes. We have a automotive manufacturer who is a tier one, tier two, and tier three supplier located in Conway.
Yeah.
So our point was to be able to showcase to other leaders that these skills are here and they pay very good money.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these welding jobs, I know typically not in our area.
Sure.
But a welder who graduates from Horry Georgetown Technical College and is willing to go to West Virginia to do work on some of their welding can make up to $5,000 a week.
Wow.
So when people are pushing their kids who are a hands-on kid to go sit in an office where they're going to be miserable, we're just trying to get the word out. They can go to welding at Horry Georgetown Tech.
Yep.
They can go to work for our industry here and make up to $100,000 or more in a manufacturing facility because those jobs make great money and they support great industries. And together, getting the word out and showing something your kid may actually be more interested in and being able to use their hands. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's trades. Trades are hot right now.
Absolutely.
And I feel like everyone should check it out, understand that we do have them, and see that it's not dirty. So that's what our awareness course does. We charge a yearly fee for it. You go through one time. You visit about 45 industries.
That's cool.
Over the 8 or 9 class meets that you have. And it's one full day each month. We don't meet in December. And I think there's one other month we don't meet in. But it's a great program. And I've been very happy with the success from class one. And we're looking forward to class two that just kicked off the week of the hurricane.
Perfect. I think that's a good place to wrap.
Yeah, thank you very
much. Thanks for doing this,
Andy. I've enjoyed it. Thanks.
Yeah, perfect.